This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
We're joined in the studio first up by Dr. Gareth Weston from Monash IVF. Welcome to Hide and Seek.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Dr. Gareth, what is IVF?
Well, I mean, first of all, I should stress that what I'm mainly here to talk about is the use of donor sperm by lesbian couples within our program.
Right.
And IVF, yes, that is one way in which lesbian couples can start a family together, but a lot of them will start families together with home inseminations or artificial insemination. But IVF stands for in vitro fertilization, and it's a complex medical technical process where we stimulate a woman's ovaries with injectable hormones, which she self-administers. Once the ovaries have responded successfully to that medication, we, under a brief anaesthetic, collect the eggs with an ultrasound-guided needle via the vagina.
Sounds delightful.
Yes, I've got three to do tomorrow, and I've got another 14 on Saturday. So
14 on Saturday? Yes. How long does it take? Wouldn't take
about
very long.
Half an hour per egg collection procedure.
Wow. Is that called a harvest?
It can be. Yes, it can be.
You made your night there, I think, James.
Yep.
So the eggs are then taken back to the laboratory where they are stripped of the surrounding cells and then directly injected with sperm. And in the case of same-sex couples, same-sex female couples, that'll be either an anonymous or a known sperm donor.
Okay, so then inserted back in?
After the egg is inseminated by direct injection, we call that ICSI, or intracytoplasmic sperm injection.
Right.
We grow the embryos up for 5 days.
Okay.
And growing them up to that advanced stage of development gives us excellent pregnancy rates. I mean, not perfect.
Right.
As our other guests will be able to attest to later.
Oh.
But success rates approaching 55% to 60% in women under 35.
Okay. How common is it that women need to use IVF? Like, it is a last resort, right?
I consider it so.
Yeah.
But there are a whole range of reasons that couples or single women will resort to IVF. Some may use IVF because they need genetic screening.
Yeah.
They may have genetic conditions they want to rule out. Others may do IVF for example, today I've already seen one woman who was having eggs frozen because she was about to have chemo for breast cancer.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Another couple with a child with thalassemia major who are desperately looking to prevent thal major in any future children by genetically screening embryos.
So when you've grown the embryo for 5 days, then you can do a screen to see if it's got genes that could develop problems down the track?
That's correct.
That is unbelievable.
If you are a carrier of genetic problems, yeah.
So you can have a screening yourself to see if you're a carrier of these kind of problems?
Especially in donor situations, the genetic screening is absolutely mandatory. So all of our sperm donors, whether they're known or anonymous, need to be screened for a variety of common genetic problems like cystic fibrosis, thalassemia, karyotype abnormalities.
Yeah. Okay. So we've seen a lot of Hollywood movies where the premise is that somebody's going to go and find anonymous sperm, and there's always this lovely folder full of he's 6'4" with blue eyes, blonde hair, and is a Harvard graduate. What is the kind of selection process around sperm? Or do you not get, if you're going for anonymous sperm, is it truly anonymous and you get what you're given?
These are very good questions. So effectively, at the moment, 20% of our same-sex couples will present with a known donor. Mm-hmm. So they'll come with someone they know. It may be a friend, it may be the relative of one of the members of the couple, and often somebody that they're quite attached to having genetically in their child. But for the other 80% come to us requesting an anonymous, that is a clinic recruited sperm donor where we know who it is,
yeah,
but they won't know exactly who it is. So the information we give them is height, hair colour, eye colour, ethnicity, religion, profession, non-identifying information that gives them a bit of a feel of what that person is like. The age that they were at when they donated.
Okay. Does that make a difference?
You'd be surprised how much of a difference it makes. I mean, women, when they're looking through the anonymous donor sperm list, look through every little detail when making their choice.
What does age have to, like, why are people looking at age?
Is it okay, we like
see
to
if they're good swimmers or? Yeah,
that's exactly correct, actually.
Oh, right, okay.
So there is a decline in sperm function as men get older.
Yeah.
We have a cutoff of 45.
Right, okay.
And I have been in the embarrassing situation of having to decline one of my friends who was over 45 at one stage.
Yeah.
There is a slightly increased risk of miscarriage and genetic abnormalities as men get older. And so when women are coming to us wanting to use an anonymous donors we've recruited, we like them to be under 45.
And I guess when you're spending that much money as well, you don't really want to take the chance that it's not going to swim in.
Well, there certainly is that, but there's also that as if we are medically providing a treatment to allow someone to get pregnant, then we need to take some responsibility
of
reduce and minimising harm from what they're doing.
Hide and seek.
It's your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self.
The most diverse sound for the most diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
You're on Hide and Seek with James Finlay and Avi Miller for your Thursday evening. And we are talking IVF and having kids.
Yes.
We've got Dr. Gareth Weston here in the studio from Monash IVF and introducing Lauren and Stacey, a lesbian couple who are currently undergoing IVF.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, ladies. Hi. Thank you for coming in. Now, how long have you thought about having kids for?
A while. We've been together for nearly 9 years.
Yeah. Wow.
And when our now donor, we know our donor.
Yep.
He asked us when we were having kids in 2009. So probably from then we've been thinking about it.
Okay.
Yeah. When you guys first got together 9 years ago, did you both want kids before you got together and you were happy that the other person wanted kids, or was this something that evolved during the 9 years that you'd been together?
I always thought that I'd have kids.
Yes, so did I.
Okay. I never thought I'd end up with a woman.
Oh, that's a whole different episode.
But, yeah, I always thought that, and we always talked about having a family.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, I agree. Yeah.
So I guess the thing that gay and lesbian couples have to go through is, well, just how exactly are we going to get these kids? And I guess you would have had to go through the thought process of are we going to have a child of our own? Are we going to adopt one to make our own? What was that conversation like?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting one. Well, I actually didn't know how we were going to do it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I photographed a photographer. So I photographed a couple that did what we are doing, which is my egg in Stack's womb.
Ah, yeah, okay.
And we've done that because it's the closest thing that we're going to have a child together. Yeah. And
that was actually going to be my next question is did you guys, I want to know the decision-making process around picking eggs and wombs and other things. Flip a coin, game of two up.
No, I'm the older one. So I'm 35, Stacks 33.
Okay.
Oh.
We can say I'm 32. Yeah.
There you go.
Well, that's not much of an age difference.
Yeah. Yeah. And income had to do with it too, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So yeah, that had to be a factor.
It's one of those interestingly practical things that we get to do as gay and lesbian couples, is we get to have logistical conversations as opposed to accidents in the back of utes.
Yes. Mm.
So we get to decide based on socioeconomic requirements. It's you're going to have to get pregnant because I'm have to bring home the bacon kind of stuff. And then once you've given birth to the baby, et cetera, et cetera. And we get to have these discussions.
Yes.
Originally, when we were first talking about it, we were thinking of each carrying a child.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been through insemination.
Yeah.
But then, as Lauren said, when we met now friends of ours who did the egg sharing thing, we thought, oh, we love the idea of that. We love the idea of the fact that it's taken both of us to bring this baby into the world. And mm-hmm. so that's why we decided to go in that direction.
Yeah.
And you know your donor.
Yes.
Did you both know that was the father of your child, or was that a discussion that you had to have as well?
Well, let me correct. We don't say father, we say donor.
Donor. Well, donor, okay, but I'm...
Okay. No, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Biological parent?
Well, he's an amazing person. He went mm-hmm. to our wedding when we got married in 2012.
And awesome. Congratulations.
him and his wife, because they live in Canada.
Right.
So that's a whole other... That's a whole other situation to try to get the sperm over here. Uh-huh. But
I just FedEx it over.
Yeah.
All right.
So he when that situation came, because we were talking about it. Actually, Stack tells his story way better than I do.
go on.
Yeah, so in 2009, we went over there. They just had their first child.
Okay, you went to Canada.
We went to Canada. Yep. We'd been to their wedding in 07, and then we went back in 09, and they'd had a little bubba. And we were just waiting outside for his wife, and he said, when are you guys going to have one of these? And we said, oh, well, it's a bit more involved. Yeah. And we said, you know, we're missing an ingredient. And Lauren said, why are you offering? And he thought about it, and he went,
Yeah.
Yeah. He goes, yeah, I don't see a problem with that. And we said, don't joke about this because we'll hold you to it.
Yeah.
And he thought about it a bit more and he went, no, I'm pretty... Yeah, no, he goes, I've got plenty. You can, yeah. What am I going to do with them?
Lucky
and
am.
Yeah. And then we got home and we sent an email saying, are you serious?
Yeah.
And then they sent us back a video with both of them, you know, so his wife, saying that they were on board if we wanted to go ahead with it. And it kind of went from there.
I was going to ask what his wife's thought. Do you know what her thought process was?
Yeah. So for when we started to look into this last year, is that all right?
Yeah.
When we started looking into it last year, we did an extensive amount of emails back and forth to each other, asking them a whole heap of random questions, especially the wife. We asked her a whole heap of questions like, what happens if it looks like him?
Mm.
What happens if you see a picture on Facebook and you don't like it, or all of like, what happens if we dress our girl in blue? Mm. You know, just write random questions, and she answered them, and she was amazing. We also, you have to do a lot of counselling
mm-hmm.
with the couple.
Okay.
They do it two by themselves. We do two, and then we do a joint one. So, and that was fantastic because it cleared up a lot of questions. And yeah, the counsellor sort of was our mediator, but she's been totally on board and totally supportive.
Mm. I guess one of the conversations that you have to have when you are thinking about where you'll get your sperm from is, do I want this person to be part of this child's life? Do I just want them to be a means to an outcome? Yeah. And I guess that's, you know, if it's someone that you already knew, then you thought, well, he is great, so it would be kind of nice if he was in the child's life anyway, right?
For us, distance helped. So the fact that he's on the other side of the world is kind of a good thing for us.
Mm-hmm.
But then they have no problem meeting if you know, hopefully if we haven't had a child yet, but if we have a child, that they've got no problem meeting them.
Yeah.
But they probably won't be involved that much in the upbringing, I wouldn't
No.
Nah.
Well, especially when they're on the other side of the world.
But I suppose it is a challenge for a known donor, in for example, in this circumstance, how you, obviously somebody who's as close a friend to say, of course you can have my sperm and my wife agrees to, it must be quite interesting then to say, and we want you to have nothing to do with raising the baby. You're not even going to be godparents. Are they going to be godparents?
I mean, yeah, we're not really.
But it's one of those. I think the new term is guideparent.
Guideparent.
Yes. Gets rid of the god.
I would quite like to be a god, thank you very much. Does that not mean I'm not the god if I'm a godparent?
Yes.
Oh, devastated. But I suppose that's one of possibly the benefits of anonymous donor is that there is no awkward moments around you're a really good friend of ours to the point that you actually gave us your sperm, but we want you to have nothing to do with raising our child kind of stuff.
Well, communication's absolutely 100% the key
here. Yeah.
And so we've just been honest straight up. We pretty much said you've got going to have no parental rights. We don't expect anything from you except your sperm.
Yep.
but, like, we won't ask for any money. Nothing's required of you. We just...
just point the sperm.
Need your boys.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that they brought up with the counsellor. That was one of the things they said. Legally, what are they, you know, is there anything that they could be, you know, brought back onto them later down the track? And they said no, and they were happy with that.
Yeah.
So.
And I think the birth certificate now would say
both of our names.
Both of your names. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's easy when you're a lesbian couple, you know? You've got the uterus.
Guys, I know, you guys have got it tough.
Yeah. We do. I've got to find something. So I've got to then find a uterus to carry it in.
To quote Monty Python, where are you going to keep the fetus? You don't have a womb. Where's the fetus going to gestate?
Great topics, great radio.
Pine and Seed.
Touching our community. Right around the nation.
Pine and Seed.
Reaching far and wide. Stream us now. Joy 94.9.
You're on Hide and Seek here on Joy 94.9, your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self and baby making.
Yes, baby making. We are looking at baby making at
indeed.
The moment.
Indeed. I want to go back to Dr. Gareth because you guys need sperm.
We have a major shortage. the act changed in 2008. Mm-hmm. That was enacted in 2010, meaning that single women and lesbian couples no longer needed to have a medical diagnosis of infertility in order to access treatment. Now, I've actually seeking to publish our data for the last 5 years at Monash IVF.
Mm.
We have had a 3.5-fold increase in the number of lesbian couples coming to us seeking children with donor sperm.
Mm-hmm.
80% of those women are expecting us to find the donors. They would want an anonymous
donor.
They
want anonymous.
So
okay,
Stacey and Lauren have their own donor, but they are only 20% of the lesbian couples that we see.
Is that for simplicity? I mean, it's quite a complex procedure to begin with. Is saying you work out the donor bits kind of just easier on the couple with everything else going on, do you
what's
think?
What's even more interesting is that when you compare women in a relationship with another woman compared to a woman on her own, 98% of single women will come to us and want an anonymous donor.
Oh. So the majority usually always wants anonymous donor.
In both groups.
In both groups.
Although lesbian couples are far more resourceful in securing a chap to provide them with sperm.
No.
Well, I guess if the single woman had found a chap that she wanted someone to donate, she probably maybe would have just married him.
Or slept with him.
Yeah, slept with him, yeah.
I was going to say, you don't actually have to get married in these days.
No, that's true.
Have a baby, I'm just saying. But get with the year 2000.
She can easily put a penis in her vagina.
Assuming she's a heterosexual single woman, she could also be a lesbian single woman.
Yes. I'm also assuming
you're making
this.
Massive. Oh, sorry,
a penis in her vagina.
Yeah, she could have also had that. Yeah,
she could have done that. But I wanted to ask.
Sorry.
No, it's all biology.
I wanted to, obviously as someone who's adept at masturbation. How many
you are?
You could put that to very good use.
Well, yeah. No, I have other medical issues that are going to disavow me from donating sperm, I'm afraid. But otherwise, I'd be there in a flash. I could masturbate for Queen and Country. I wanted to know: do you have stats on lesbian women preferring heterosexual or homosexual donors?
Oh, now that is a very good question. Mm. I would think that if they were actually to have the choice, my experience would probably be that many of them would prefer to have a homosexual donor.
Imagine all the gay genes. Mm. That'd be a fabulous baby.
Yeah.
No.
Army.
Yeah.
No, you gay know, army. You know how kids like rebelling against their parents. It's going to be you know, the two queeniest guys are just going to produce the straightest, butchest rugby player. And it's hilarious.
Have you seen that video of the son comes out to his gay parents as straight?
That's hilarious.
Yes, it's hilarious. YouTube it.
It's awesome. But the next question I was going to ask is how this is blood is obviously an easy, everybody, we always need blood, and because blood is scarce and there is matching difficulties and you have to be the right type and all sorts of things. With sperm, how many donations can one get from one donation, if you see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
It depends on the quality of the sperm.
And I guess it's how long since they've jerked off before that. You know, how much have they saved up?
It's true. We would like you to have 3 days of abstinence, if that is possible.
Oh, it's never going to happen for me. That rules me out again.
And that's certainly possible for me.
No. Yeah. 3 hours is quite tough. Surely.
No, this is why you work at home.
No, this is one of the benefits of working at home.
Continue, Doctor.
Sorry. Yeah.
So we do have a private room for that purpose, and we have at Monash IVF two main facilities. Mm. We have material to provide you with sufficient inspiration to come up with the material that we need. Okay. We would have a look at the quality of the sperm, mm-hmm. and then freeze it into straws. So we may get multiple straws or aliquots out of one ejaculate. Mm-hmm. We freeze it down in lots that will be enough for one insemination or one IVF cycle.
So if you donate once and you have quite a good load, there's a chance that it could be used for several people?
Yes. Now, we have the strictest legislation restricting how many women can access use to a single donor in Victoria.
Okay.
Yeah. Far stricter than anywhere else in Australia.
Okay.
And the recent Senate inquiry basically recommended that the Victorian legislation of the Victorian way of dealing with donors was adopted Australia-wide, but it has not yet.
Oh, right.
So we can only use one sperm donor to create children for up to 10 women.
Up to 10 women? Okay.
Yes. Now, a donor can specify
that. But not 10 children?
Well, one woman can have multiple children from that one donor, and that's still considered. Because remember, we're trying to reduce the risk of
inbreeding.
Yes, well, unintended incest, obviously.
Mm.
So if children are in the one family, they're not going to commit incest with each other unless they're on Game of Thrones. So basically, we can only use for up to 10 women, and we would include the two lesbian members of one couple as two separate women for those purposes.
Yeah, okay.
I did argue very strongly that the two women in a relationship would be considered as one family, because the legislation actually stipulates families rather than women.
Yep.
But I lost that argument, unfortunately, on the committee at Monash IVF. So the donor can stipulate that they don't want that many women. They can say, look, I only want to donate and have five women have children from my sperm.
Yeah.
You can also stipulate certain restrictions.
Okay.
So you could donate and say, I would only want my sperm to be used by lesbian couples.
Oh, yeah.
So we will pretty much take all comers.
I think I'm...
I think he's waiting. He's been waiting 36 minutes to use that joke.
Exactly.
Sperm donors are not paid in Australia.
we can compensate them, but by law we cannot offer a financial inducement. So I think that the compensation comes to around about $800-$900. I don't know the exact compensation. And remember, we would ask a donor to donate up to 10 times. So it is a significant investment of time and effort for a donor.
It's a drive to and from Monash IVF. And obviously that's, what's the time frame that you would, because you want, so that's over, the minimum is
so
almost.
We would, if a good donor, a really good donor, we'd love to come in several times to donate.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they need to go through counselling, they need to have genetic testing, STD screening, and then their sperm will be quarantined for 6 months before it will be released for use.
Right.
Okay, why is it quarantined?
Because we need to allow for the window period so that we can ensure our couples that the sperm they're using is free of HIV.
Okay, yeah, okay.
And the Therapeutic Goods Administration sets a six-month limit on that. We now know that probably three months is probably more than enough. And so we allow women with known donors to sign a waiver.
Okay, to get it in.
To use it after 3 months, yes.
And I'm guessing that HIV-positive donors are not required if you know that you're HIV-positive?
Unfortunately, as an anonymous donor, not. They're... possibly could be the capacity in as a known donor.
Right.
Not at Monash IVF, but there is a program that all of the IVF units in Melbourne feed into through the Royal Women's Hospital. So that could be explored.
Because, you know, a HIV-positive man on treatment who's undetectable, while there is no guarantee that means that he'll be undetectable in his sperm, but it's a much lower prevalence of HIV in sperm.
I wouldn't say just lower. It is probably negligible.
Okay.
If you are treated so that there is no detectable HIV virus in the seminal plasma.
Okay.
So this is fairly well established in other places around the world now. And if you're HIV positive, there's no reason that you couldn't have a child as well.
But not as you wouldn't accept as an anonymous donor, but you might be able to have a child as part of a known donor.
Without question. I mean, that's it. We're opening into a whole other area which we could spend another hour on. But if you were a HIV positive male couple and you wanted to have children, for instance, you could find commercial egg donor, commercial surrogacy programs, for instance, in California, which if you could cross their palm with enough gold, they would certainly give you a very good chance of a child.
I was going to ask, we've got a couple of minutes before we have to do a few more sponsorship announcements. Obviously, commercial surrogacy is not legal in Australia.
That's correct.
What's the word for non? I remembered it years ago.
Deregulation.
Well, no, a non-commercial surrogacy.
Altruistic.
Altruistic surrogacy. Is that legal?
Absolutely.
Okay. So one could find, but it's the onus is on the, if we in this example take a gay couple, a gay male couple, would have to find an altruistic surrogate of their own. It's not, so I couldn't come to Monash IVF and say, hey, could you find me an altruistic surrogate?
Find me a uterus.
Yes.
Yes.
Unlike find me a sperm.
By law in Victoria, unfortunately, you can't even advertise in newspapers or magazines for a surrogate.
Wow.
So you would need to find through your own network. And the few cases that I've been involved with that have actually done it in Australia as opposed to the normal mechanism, which is to go overseas, secure your eggs from one source, usually use a commercial surrogate in Thailand or India because they're cheaper, basically.
Right.
The wealthy gays go to the US, and ones who are still wealthy but slightly less wealthy would go to maybe one of the cheapest routes at the moment would be donor eggs from South Africa. Surrogate in Thailand or in India.
And what are the sort of logistics to get eggs and sperm and surrogates?
Huge logistical problems. You can imagine how complex it is, and legally as well as medically.
Right.
So
you can't just throw your sperm and throw it in the Australia pox post.
No.
No. Okay.
Joy. 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 Joy.
Hide and seek.
So sexy it hurts.
You are on Hide and Seek, your show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self with Avi and James, and stacked in the studio, Lauren, Stacey, and Gareth. Lauren and Stacey, let's go back to you, lovely ladies. How long have you been in the IVF process so far?
We started it January last year, but when we saw Dr. Weston, it wasn't until April.
Okay.
And then by the time we organised sperm, that started in June, and then he didn't start his donations until October. Then that took a month, and so that wasn't finished until November, and then we had to wait 3 months.
For quarantine.
Yep.
And then we had to wait for the extra blood test, because the blood test takes 6 weeks for us.
Right.
The first lot did.
Yeah, and then the second lot was a couple of weeks.
Yes.
Yeah. And then we had to organise to ship the boys over.
We had to also go through VADA and which I forget.
Did the boys have to go through customs?
Yeah. I can't remember what VADA stands for.
Well, the Victorian Assisted Reproductive Treatment Authority. Yeah. I mean, you had a little bit more complication with your case because you were seeking to import gametes.
Yes.
From an international location.
Exactly. Yes. It was a bit. We like to do everything complicated.
Yeah.
I bet you have foreign furniture too, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, no, we've had a message in, which should say on 0427 JOY 949. The message reads, my boyfriend and I are the second couple going through surrogacy at MIVF. We have a surrogate and a donor, and we'll be conceiving in October. At this stage, it is an incredible but very new and a little hazy process. From Mike and Nate. Congratulations, Mike and Nate. Yeah, there we go. We might have to get the boys on.
Yeah.
Mike and Nate, if you're happy for me to SMS you later and possibly interview you later in the year after you've conceived, send me another message. But let's talk about cost.
Yeah, because this is an investment. From the TV shows, it's quite expensive.
A little bit, yeah.
Because any Tom, Dick and Straighty Harry can go and get easily pregnant with the, well, no cost, just a bit of an accident even. Whereas us gays, we kind of have to put a little bit of thought into that and maybe
quite a major run-up.
Yeah.
Well, because we went through IVF, that's 15 grand straight up.
Well, because we did it the way we're doing it.
Oh, because we're doing the egg sharing, which involves IVF, that's 15 grand all up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the counselling is
another grand.
Right.
And then
the boys were $4,500.
What?
It cost us, $5,000 to ship them over.
With that, that's including all
did they fly business class?
Yeah,
what?
They
yes.
Business.
Yes, and then we had to pay to send the shipper back over to where it came from.
Right, so somebody actually comes with them. You don't just pop them in the hold. That's awesome.
It's its own, I think it's like its own courier service. Like it took 2 days to bring it over. So if anyone is looking for anything overseas.
Would have been cheaper for him to come over for a holiday.
We actually thought about that, yeah. But we couldn't get the logistics or the timing
right.
That was actually something that we were strongly considering.
Yeah. Probably would have been cheaper.
It would have been cheaper.
Mm.
So all up, I think we've
25,000.
We're up to 25,000
with operations and tests and all the above.
Yeah,
it's about 25K.
Dr. Gareth, is that about that? That's obviously they've got some extenuating circumstances, but what are we looking for? I'm going to say normal, for want of a better word, but local gametes, I think you called them.
Well, if a lesbian couple wish to have a child, it depends on how they're going to conceive.
Okay.
So if you are going to have donor sperm insemination, for instance, you might be getting away with $1,800 for an insemination with donor sperm.
That's the impressive way of saying turkey baster style kind of stuff.
It's a little more than turkey basting. They will have their cycle monitored and often treated with artificial hormones, and then they will have the sperm which has been from somebody who's been counselled, been tested, been quarantined, been retested, and all of those costs gets passed on to the consumer.
Yeah,
because we think that's the fairest way of pricing it.
Yeah,
so they'll pay $650 for an aliquot of donor sperm as their contribution to the cost of the program in finding donors and getting them ready.
That's reasonable.
So that could be the simplest way of achieving pregnancy. And I've certainly got lesbian couples or who've had a pregnancy just from one cycle of artificial insemination. But then you get right through to the more complex choices, like involving Canadian sperm and using eggs from one woman and
the putting it into another. The other one,
And then, as you can see, the more complex you make your desired arrangement, the more expensive.
It's like add-ons.
And the drugs are expensive as well for what we had to.
But that's part of the 15.
That's part of our.
That's part of the 15K.
No, mine was 14,400. Oh, yeah, the pessaries.
Yeah, yeah, no. I had to take hormones and suppositories and I was on, what was I? Five pills a day.
Yeah.
And Lauren was injecting herself for a week.
This would have been fun for a while.
It was nice and hormonal. It was awesome.
Yeah. Did it increase your sex drive?
No. Get off me. But your boobs are so sore.
Oh,
and
really?
It's just like, yeah, the other person's like, whoa, and don't even look at them. They're so sore that, yeah, no.
Okay, wow.
I wanted to ask, does the increase in cost necessarily correlate with an increase in chance of pregnancy? Or is it just
It does, but 80% of the success rate of whatever treatments we provide are based on the age of the woman.
Right, okay.
And not necessarily on what we do to her.
What's the ideal age?
That's almost a philosophical question.
Okay.
But if you're talking about medically, the chance of getting pregnant from the treatment, 25 to 35 would be the peak performance age group, if you like.
That's right.
I'm still in it.
Yeah, you're in it.
And they've had one embryo transfer and they've achieved a pregnancy first time. Let's look at it that way.
So often you have to try more than once?
Well, it depends on your age and whether you have other gynecological problems which might reduce your chance for success. So there are a whole lot of factors involved. But your chances of success if you were to do IVF with donor sperm and you're a woman around 30 years of age, on average, we would get a 50% live birth rate for each embryo we transfer.
Wow. And is the age of the woman based on the age of
the egg? Not the womb.
The egg, not the womb. Okay.
Exactly.
And if it doesn't happen, say an abortion happens, is that the
miscarriage?
Yeah, miscarriage. Sorry, an abortion.
If you've gone through all the money of IVF.
Sorry, I've just got the image of the. Is that the 15 or 25?
No.
Because I was like, that's a lot of money down the drain.
For example, Stacey and Lauren have a frozen embryo, which has exactly the same chance of achieving a pregnancy from the cycle that they've done. And it will cost them around about $1,400, I think, to have a frozen embryo transfer. So it sounds expensive, but remember, $5,000 was a one-off cost to get the sperm over from Canada. And so a lot of these were one-off costs that won't recur.
Okay. Well, that's wonderful. It inspired me.
Oh, dear. Are you going to get pregnant?
Yeah.
Right.
I've been trying to get pregnant for a very long time, but nothing's been happening.
Well, keep going.
Are you
going
to donate?
Well, it's funny. One of my les friends has actually asked me if I would donate, and I have said yes, but it's not going to be for another like 5 or so years.
Would you anonymous donate though?
I would definitely consider it.
You're a student. You need the money.
I do.
Sorry, you need the compensation for your time and effort.
I'm pretty expensive.
Yeah. And we should say that Monash is looking for sperm donors. Where can they find more information about
Go to the Monash IVF website, www.monashivf.com.
Okay.
They would be able to access one of our counsellors and we'd be very, very happy to hear from them.
Awesome. Please get on that. Dr. Gareth Weston from Monash IVF, Lauren Stacey, good luck. Thank you so much
for coming. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story. It's been wonderful.
And hope it helps.
Yeah. Well, you never know. Some people are out there masturbating now, maybe.
Indeed.
Thinking, you know what? This could be useful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bag it.
I have nothing.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.